Hey everyone, welcome to the Flophouse Mini. We've got a treat for you today. First, we'll all introduce our regular selves, and then I'll introduce our guests. I'm Dan McCoy.
Hey, I'm Stuart Wellington.
I'm Elliot Kalin, but I'm not my regular self, Dan, because I was bitten by a radioactive spider earlier in the day, and I think my bones are weak as a result, so I'm less than regular.
Okay. And with us, we have two great comedy legend, comedy writer guests. We've got Mike Reiss of The Simpsons, four-time Emmy winner, and Ken Keeler of The Simpsons, also Futurama. Mike asked Ken how many Emmys he had. It turns out he has one more than Mike. So for those keeping score, right now it is Mike 4, Ken 5.
The night is young. I still like
you. You know what? That's right.
And I'm not working. So.
You never know. Like, Elliot has a few lying around. He might just motor over, give you one, Mike.
Yeah.
Just I mean, to even the score.
It's possible. You'd have to scratch out my name, but I think that might be worth it just to make this game competitive again.
Yeah, exactly.
There's the terrible joke I made. I gave one of my Emmys to my mom because I didn't have a birthday present for her. And I planned the moment she dies, I want to go to her house and grab the Emmy back. And it will be like winning the Emmy for Best Orphan.
Oh, God. Well, you know, Corona. Yeah. You could get lucky.
Yeah, you're right, Dan. Good. Yeah. That's the right way to take that one. It's just
sure, yeah.
give Mike like some to, hope about that. Yeah.
I needed causes of death for my mom. So thanks.
We tweeted at each other briefly, but this is the first time I'm seeing Mike face to face, and within minutes.
Yeah. Dan usually waits until at least the second appearance to wish death upon the mother of a guest.
I'm sitting thinking how many Emmys
well,
I can give
it's
my
a very...
mom.
Well, one more than Mike.
Yeah.
So it's a very special thing that brings us all together. Today, this episode will be released on Halloween itself, and of course, there's one Halloween song that towers above the rest.
Thriller.
Well, that is the only one that comes close. But we're talking, of course, of the Monster Mash, and I tweeted about the Monster Mash recently, as I want to do every year around this time, and sometimes not at this time of the year. And Mike somehow saw this and talked about how much he and Ken love the Monster Mash.
Yeah, was it? It was probably one of those content aggregator sites that was putting together the world's worst tweets.
Yep. He might have had a Google alert set for writers who are supposed to be working right now.
Well, anyway, this. Long story short, we're here to talk about the Monster Mash, of course, by Bobby Boris Pickett, who I wanted to say, I was looking into this. You might be surprised. It is hard to find a complete discography of all of Bobby Boris Pickett's songs online. But he did chase after this particular rainbow many other times in his career. He also wrote Monster's Holiday, Monster Motion, Transylvania Twist, Blood Bank Blues, Me and My Mummy, The Monster Swim, and The Monster Rap. And I think that there are more that I was not able to track down. So he
found
his groove early, and then...
As everyone knows, he first came to the public attention when Alan Lomax was walking through the bayous of Louisiana with his tape recorder and found Bobby Boris Pickett singing what he assumed at first was an old spiritual about the creation of a brought back to life corpse, and it rocketed him to superstardom. So who knows what he recorded on, you know, wax cylinders or things like that before that in the small recording studios of the South. Hard to say.
And do you have the album? You have the Bobby Boris Pickett album?
Do I? No. Absolutely not.
No. Okay.
I don't even like the Monster Mash.
I want to jump in and just give some history on this, which was in 1981, I think, Ken Keeler was working on a Newsweek parody that Harvard Lampoon was doing, and he wrote this article reporting the sort of the lyrics of the Monster Mash as if it was a breaking news story. And it was, I mean, everybody loved this article, and it still reads great, but I think what was so special about it was the idea that the sudden realization, everybody knows this song. Every single person, not only know that's heard it, but it's pretty familiar with all the lyrics and the turns it takes. So I thought that was the great observation. And that's why I insisted Ken be here.
I have scratched my head trying to remember what prompted it. I mean, it was the middle of summer. I couldn't have been hearing it on the radio. But I mean, it was one of those things where whatever it was, it came to me in a flash, as they say, the way things catch on. And it wrote itself, as I always say. It took about 5 minutes, and I suppose you could make it better, but it wouldn't really change the essence of it. It's just, that's the Monster Mash. This thing, these things happened, and okay.
But true, like the Monster Mash has entered kind of like folklore status, the same way that, like, I have a 6.5-year-old son, and the other day he goes, Daddy, have you heard this song about Jingle Bells, Batman Smells? And I was like, yeah, I've heard it. How did you hear it? Like, it was, the Monster Mash is like that. Like, it's just lore now. It just free floats around and everybody knows it. I don't know.
Yeah, there's always been a mash.
Yes. Yeah, has your son been hanging out on, like old railroad tracks and with hobos and such?
Yeah. It was him and Alan Lomax just wandering the bayous looking for traditional American folk nursery rhymes.
Does Alan Lomax come up on this podcast a lot?
No, I've been looking for an opportunity for years. For years.
He'll be joining on Zoom.
I do feel like there's an arc I went through with the Monster Mash where I was like, I was a kid who, you know, enjoyed it because it was a song about monsters that would play on Halloween. And then I grew older and I'm like, oh, fuck this song. This song's a novelty tune. Like, it's just like this nonsense song that was like a cash-in. And then as I've grown
older,
it's
like he doesn't even care about the monsters.
But as I've been older, like, I don't know whether it's Stockholm Syndrome or what, but like, what is cheap and about the Monster Mash is what has come to love it. Like, the more nakedly it is, this attempt to just do a novelty hit, the more I love it, you know? And I mean, although it did come about kind of organically, like it's my understanding that he just started to do a Boris Karloff impression with his band on stage one night and people loved it. So he's like, I guess this is what I do now.
But there's what you're talking about, Dan, is the arc I go through every time I listen to the song. It first starts and I'm like, oh, here it comes, the Monster Mash. This is going to be fun. And then about two verses in, I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, it's so, like, it's such a dumb song and it's so totally not in keeping with the spirit of the Universal Monsters. And then by the end of it, I'm like, I got to admire it. He wrote a whole song about this monsters doing a dance. Like,
and
like,
it
that's
is long.
It's
a
long song.
I played it on the guitar the other day and like,
what?
By
shut
the time
the fuck Dan, up, Dan McCoy.
I feel like, Dan, you are a parody of yourself in quarantine that you were playing Monster Mash on guitar in your apartment.
Well, Audrey really likes to sing. We can't go to karaoke, obviously, because like that would murder everyone right now. So I was just playing guitar, we were singing songs, and I was like, I gotta sing the Monster Mash. And I get to like, I get done with verse 3 and I'm like, surely this song is over. And then there's a lot more to the song.
I have to take exception to this. I never thought it was stupid. I mean, I never thought it was brilliant, but I thought when Bobby Boris Pickett wrote it, he sort of knew what it was that was appealing about it. I don't feel like people are, when people, for example, like your tweets, those don't read as making fun of it. It's, yeah, that if you showed them to Bobby Boris Pickett, said, yeah, that's about right.
I'm going to go deeper, which is because I have nothing else to do, I've been thinking about the Monster Mash for about a month, knowing we'd be doing a 15-minute podcast. And I'm not being facetious when I say I think it may be the greatest song in the history of songs. And part of that is, like, I'm old enough. We had the single when it came out. I was 3, but we had it playing in the house. And I've never gotten tired of it. And we every Halloween, we break out this dancing Frankenstein that plays the Monster Mash. And I enjoy the song every single time. And I can't listen to the Beatles anymore. 200 plus songs. I'm sick of every one of them. Monster Mash still does it for me.
Well, when I say it's stupid, I say it with great affection, because some of my favorite things are very, very stupid. But I love the, I mean, it tells a whole story. Yeah. I don't know. This may be controversial, but I don't think the story holds together.
I will say it's more coherent than the later Universal Monster movies, where they're just throwing all the monsters into a house together to see what happens. You know, like, it's at least it tells a better story than that. But here's the main issue I have with it, and this is going to sound possibly pedantic, is that he's doing a Boris Karloff impression for Dr. Frankenstein, essentially. Boris Karloff often played Dr. Frankenstein. He should be doing Colin Clive impression. Well, there you have it, Boris Pickett. I threw down the gauntlet. What do you say to that?
You got him.
I got him. Boom. Consider this myth busted.
One thing I noticed, too, about the story of the song is, and this is why I think it's so rich, is you don't expect it. It's actually Dracula's story.
he has the change of heart in it. Yeah, he's the one who learned something.
It's sort of like the last version of A Star Is Born. He had his Transylvania twist, supplanted by the Monster Mash. He's bitter, but it has a happy ending. Now he's playing with the band. That is the arc of the song.
Well, I like that the narrator reassures you, too. Like, in case you were worried that Dracula bears a grudge, he says, now everything's cool, Drac's a part of the band. And you're like, okay. Good. The minor conflict that arose. Well,
that pinpoints something I love about Halloween and the way these monsters have become such an accepted part of, like, culture and kid culture, is he's literally talking about there's a specific bedroom where vampires eat people, and there's all these ghouls. But the problem of it is Dracula's not happy about this song. Don't worry. They made up. Like, the fact that they're all going to leave and murder people is not an issue. Like, it's totally okay.
Well, also, I mean, like, do these monsters, I guess the Universal horror movies have proven that these monsters do just hang out together, but
I mean, I don't know if it's a hang out together, they run into each other sometimes, they're in the same business.
Yeah, they meet each other, as the titles say, but like, the Monster Mash is this clarion call, like, as soon as the Monster Mash starts happening, which immediately they know to call the Mash for some reason, I don't know what that is, but they come swooping in. Like, oh, a party's happening, a monster party specifically, even though for you, the living, this mash is meant to.
Is a mash like a style of dancing?
The mash is, remember the mashed potato? No, you wouldn't remember the mashed potato. There were a series of mashed potato dances, and the Monster Mash was another mash in that style. In the same way that the Swiss Family Robinson, they're not named Robinson. It's because it's another novel in the style of Robinson Crusoe. The mash is a genre, as we can tell by how many other mashes there have been.
there's the show mash, there's the movie mash, all part of the same lineage, I guess.
After mash.
You know, that makes the Monster Swim make a lot more sense to me, because suddenly I'm like, oh yeah, the swim is a type of dance. Whereas, having never heard the Monster Swim, I'm just like imagining, you know, you go to a public pool, and they're like, okay, kids out of the pool, it's Monster Swim time. You know, like, that was what...
And then the gill man gets in, sure.
And then all the kids wait around Black the Loon edge of the pool, laps. And they're all mad that they can't swim.
they're mad that the bride is swimming super slowly, just really rubbing it in that she gets the pool all to herself. I do, Dan, you mentioned that it mentions how this song is for you, the living, as well. I like that because it's like a little touch of Abraham Lincoln gets into the song. You know?
And yes, I had just noticed that as I've been thinking about it over the past couple weeks. It made me look at all the lyrics. It's pretty elegantly written. I mean, that dialogue is...
It's the rhyme scheme is perfect. There's no forced or fake rhymes in the whole thing.
I will object only to highlight what is actually my favorite part of the song, because I believe it to be the most awkward part of the song, which is, I guess it's the bridge, because it is different from everything else in the song. You would call it the bridge, where it's the zombies were having fun, the party had just begun, The guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. And I love it because like it does feel like in the middle of his song, he like gave up for a little bit before he got a second wind. like right in the middle of the song, he's just going to be like, okay, well, who was on the guest list? I'll explain that. And then now back to the rocking part of the song.
Look, there's a lot of monsters. You can't have lyrics for all of them, you know? You just got to, at some point, just list names, you know? Somebody. The Metaluna mutant was there. Also, probably King Kong. Maybe the characters from The Black Cat. Were they monsters? Let's just continue with the song. See, there's a rhyme for you too, Dan.
There, great.
Someone observed when we... Part of why I love the song, you can just keep unpacking it. And someone mentioned that Dracula wakes up from his coffin in the middle of the party, and which makes you think, she said... So he came to the party with his coffin, and it makes you think, oh, fuck, Dracula's going to stay all night long.
The detail that I've been thinking about a lot is that the coffin bangers, or baggers, I'm not quite sure which, probably coffin baggers, were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five. Now, the song is credited to Bobby Boris Pickett and the Crypt Kickers. What happened to the coffin baggers? How did they lose their credit? I mean, they're apparently the musicians, moreover, because the Crypt Kickers are vocalists. I don't know. Somebody got screwed out of some royalties.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And is Crypt Kickers... Right
through the looking glass.
Is Crypt Kickers a pun on Shit Kickers? That just suddenly hit me. Because what is that otherwise?
I can only assume, yeah. I mean,
it's gotta be.
It's one of those jokes, like when they did the poster for the Smurfs movie, and they're like, "Smurf happens."
Don't even bring it up. Don't even bring it up.
That only makes sense because you know it means shit.
Not a fan of those. Not a fan of the kids' movie taglines that where you need to know swear words to understand them. It's interesting. You rarely hear a song that documents the credits that the songwriters then try to hide. Like, there's not a lot of those.
It seems like a bad strategy, yeah. It's like, hey, look, guess who you're listening to? But, you know, it's a secret. Keep...
This is probably why he just had one hit. And this is something else I had to write to Ken about it because he is a mathematician, which was, the Monster Mash is a dance, but it's also a song. They say the band was playing the Monster Mash, but the song, the Monster Mash, is about the song, the Monster Mash. It tells you the creation of the song and goes to the end to saying it's the hit of the land. So somehow the song knows that the song will be a hit. And I thought I found it more confusing than Tenet.
I can only assume that, I think this has been observed before, but the Monster Mash song is not about we do not hear the song The Monster Mash within The Monster Mash. The Monster Mash, as we know it in this universe, is a song about another song called The Monster
Mash. Unless it is this song and they added on a lyric at the added on a new verse, like a celebratory verse, or a boastful verse. Yeah. I don't know. But you're right, it does raise the question of whether there is another Monster Mash out there. And whether it may even now still be lurking in that castle, forcing people to rock out to this dance that, as far as I know, nobody knows how to do. Like, a lot of those dance songs would explain how to do the dances, right?
Uh-huh.
Like later on, like the Time Warp song in Rocky Horror Picture Show, like, it explains how you do the Time Warp. But I don't know the Monster Mash is some kind of mashed potato dance, but I don't know what you do that makes it monstery, you know?
It is my understanding that it is like the mashed potato, but you hold your arms out in a sort of a Frankenstein's monster, traditional, stereotypical motion.
Dan, you're really missing your calling as, like, a bar mitzvah, like, MC character, like, hype man, who, like, gets everybody on the dance floor to dance. And you explain the dances people.
I mean, the Monster Mash is not a huge bar mitzvah song.
Really?
Like, that's, maybe it is at Transylvanian bar mitzvahs. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know if you want to reveal this, Elliot, but I mean, we're talking about big life party events, and there's a very important connection that you, personal connection you have to the Monster Mash.
Well, yeah, sure. Well, I danced the Monster Mash at my wedding. Yeah, that goes without saying. Sure, that's scientific fact.
That's the big twist ending to this podcast.
It was not the first dance song.
No.
What was that? The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald?
I did lobby for it. There was a
MacArthur's Park.
Yeah. Yeah, we danced to MacArthur Park. Originally our first dance was I Only Have Eyes for You, not the Shabop Shabop version of it, closer to the version from the movie Dames. But then I believe it was a former coworker of mine, James Jimmy Don, who requested that the Monster Mash be played by the DJ, and I was delighted at that choice until two verses in where I was like, I'm still dancing to a song about monsters. Yeah. Like, okay. Like, what's... And then by the end of it, I was like, you know what? I liked that I danced to a monster song at my wedding. So I went through that whole personal emotional roller coaster that comes with the Monster Mash. Dan, do you think we'll ever see a resurgence in monster novelty pop songs again?
Oh, I hope so. You know, like, I feel like the closest we got was when unexpectedly, like, two bars of Werewolf Bar Mitzvah took the country by storm, and they're like, we gotta put out a longer version of this. And so there's a fuller version of Werewolf Bar Mitzvah you can find. But
do you think if Universal's Dark Universe had gotten to make more movies, if they would have played like a soft, slow acoustic version of the Monster Mash over one of the trailers?
Oh, it would be like Trent Reznor's version of the Monster Mash like just like, you know, ambiguous shots of monsters. Well, that because the song, if I'm remembering correctly, it came out around the time that there was a resurgence in monster stuff. Because the Universal movies were being re-released to theaters and also packaged for television broadcast. So it was like, suddenly, monsters were big again. And so I wonder if maybe, just maybe, there's some beautiful day in the future when we can stop worrying about the world around us and start worrying again that someone's going to bring a dead body back to life and it's going to throw a girl in a lake, or like a Dracula is going to walk around and have both a daughter and a son. The daughter doesn't get mentioned in the song, but he has a movie where he has one. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that's too beautiful a world to hope for, but it's what I'm working towards with my new political activity pack group.
They're referring to Dracula's son? I thought they were referring to the Wolfman's son, and Dracula was there too.
Dracula and his son.
But you think he modifies Wolfman? That's just insane.
Don't forget everything I was just saying. Stuart, we got to deal with this. We got to deal with this. Stuart,
what's the lyric again?
The guests included Wolfman, Dracula and his son. So you think
it's modifying Wolfman.
They went back to the front
okay,
of the
Okay, so here's another suggestion
sentence.
About how that might work. It's so at some point Dracula turned into a werewolf, and it's the list included Wolfman, parentheses, Dracula, and his son. It's possible. Prove me wrong, Stuart.
I don't have the lyric sheet in front of me.
much like we release a damned soul by driving a stake through their heart, I feel like we need to release our guests from this horrible monster purgatory we've put them into. Because I promised them to not spend too much time talking about this stuff. But I want to thank
you. Knew why make promises you can't keep, Dan? Well, you're the fool with that one.
The
shame
podcast is still not as long as the song itself.
That's true. Yeah.
Also, Mike and I are going to continue to talk about the Monster Mash after this is over. So,
I mean, we can do it. I just
here's my cheat sheet. I got so much more to talk about.
Oh, do you have more?
Tell us.
I was worried.
I'll just mention
you've got
that
more.
This
tell
might
us.
Be a good wrap up, but it's sort of a happy ending, which is. A friend of mine writes the comic strip Zits, and I don't mean to brag, but he writes it, and he made enough money off of Zits that he was able to buy a Malibu beach house on the beach, and the house on his left was owned by Paul Fusco, the man who operated and created the Alf puppet. And the guy on his right was Bobby Boris Pickett. So that has got to be the funnest block in Malibu.
That's like what my idea of as a child of what it would be like to be like a famous Hollywood entertainer would be, where it's like, I'm going to live next door to Alf. I'm going to live next door to Bobby Boris Pickett. This is going to be amazing. What did he say? Was he a good neighbor? did he tell you anything about him, or?
He said they would party all night. And they,
wow.
A bunch of monsters would come to the house.
Oh, yeah, it was autobiographical song.
It's autobiographical.
To get a jolt from his electrodes.
You get up at... The doorbell rings at night and you get up and there's a mummy at the door and you're like, next door, not this house.
He's really like Lou Reed. He just writes about the people he knows.
Now I want to see the movie about Bobby Boris Pickett where he's like, no one's writing songs about us, man. And he's sitting in a bar with like Frankenstein and Dracula.
Okay, well.
I'm out.
Thank you so much for being with us, Mike and Ken. I don't know if you have anything to plug for whatever worth we have as a mouthpiece for that. Please do it.
We might be finally able to help them get the word out about The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wolfman, Dracula, and his son?
No, I
won't
sully this with a plug.
I got nothing to plug.
The sun, one last thought. The sun in the song comes off like Eric Trump, where he just sort of, he's got nothing to do. He comes to a party with his dad. Uh-huh. There's no other mention of him. He doesn't do anything.
Does he have his own coffee?
To clarify.
Drake is like, I couldn't find a babysitter this late.
Now, Dan, were you doing a Wolfman impression or a Dracula impression?
Yeah, that was the Wolfman. Okay, well, on that note, to all of our listeners and to everyone in the world, Happy Halloween! Everyone's rolling their eyes and cut.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.